Bonjour. How's everybody doing out there? We hope you're doing well. We hope you enjoyed our royalty-free theme song. You may have heard it before. My name is Matthew Ederer, and this is the AEW Dynamite Deep Dive. Today, we will be discussing AEW Dynamite number 216 from the Windy Apple, Chicago, Illinois. A quick public service announcement to begin, and then we will get into the show. This is a public service announcement brought to you in part by Matthew Ederer and Slim Shady. There are a lot of influencers out there who pay for views, plays, podcast downloads, what have you. It's kind of like a known problem in the industry. It's always quite obvious when someone does that. It's extremely transparent. We can tell. Those people are cowards, liars, and just the corniest carny human beings on earth. The carniest corny human beings on earth. You're corny, you're carny. I realize it's a crowded marketplace, but that's part of the challenge. It's your job to grow organically. If you can't swim on your own merits, you should sink, period. Buying views, downloads, and followers is absolutely pathetic behavior. I think we can all agree with that. It's usually done by washed up, crusted over old men who know that they no longer have anything to offer to this society at all. Here's the thing though, buying followers just to make yourself look good or feel better, while absolutely pathetic, laughable behavior, it isn't that bad. It's embarrassing. It's shameful. It is obviously the definition of small dick energy, as they say. It is pathetic. But just the act of buying followers, it's simply embarrassing. Like a grown man in a pool wearing water wings, or like going to the Sturgis bike rally with training wheels on. It's a bad look, but on its own, it's just pathetic. If you knowingly buy followers and downloads, and then bring those knowingly inflated numbers to advertisers or sponsors to sell your show, that's a crime. That is fraud. That is the literal definition of fraud. Buying followers, listens, and podcast downloads is at best humiliating and pathetic. Bringing those fake numbers, though, to an advertiser is literally a crime. That's fraud. Don't do fraud, friends. So anybody out there listening to this who this might apply to, I implore you, I beg you, please stop. You're embarrassing yourself, and I promise you're hurting in the long run way more than you're helping. To the vast majority of our listeners out there on Sunday night's main event who this does not apply to, well, again, I'll hit you with a bonjour, and let us get in to AEW Dynamite number 216 from Chicago, Illinois. Not sure if you heard this, friends, but AEW is doing their own version of the G1, their own version of the NBA in-season tournament known as the Continental Classic. A round-robin tournament brought to you by AEW. 12 men, two groups of six. You wrestle everyone in your group, so 5 matches. 3 points for a win, 1 each for a draw. Soccer rules, not hockey or basketball rules. And the, I guess, 2 winners of the groups face off in the final. I don't believe there is a playoff system within the groups. Which is an interesting choice, but yes, the 2 group winners will face off in the final. The winner of the Continental Classic here will become a Triple Crown champion. They will win Eddie Kingston's Ring of Honor World title and New Japan Strong title and unify them with the new AEW Continental title to be the modern American Triple Crown winner. That would be the prize for this here tournamente. So the Continental Classic kicks off on this evening, and we get right into Continental Classic action after Excalibur explains to us those rules that set up our first match in the first ever AEW Continental Classic. It is Swerve Strickland versus Jay Lethal. This was a pretty good match. It's a tough beat for Jay Lethal because Swerve Strickland was selling this entire match. He couldn't even do taunts. He was so hurt. But Swerve, at 70% at best, still defeats Jay Lethal in this year wrestling match. It was very good, though. I quite enjoyed this match. I like the story that they were telling where, you know, Sir Strickland was withered. He was wilted, but this flower still bloomed, baby. He still got it done against Jay Lethal. Lots of time spent on the outside of the ring in this match, which they always tend to spend a lot of time on the outside of the ring during picture-in-picture. And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but we had 5 matches on this show. All 5 had an extended commercial during the match. So that's a necessary evil, I suppose, in television wrestling. But it's annoying when every single match has a long commercial right at the start or right at the middle of it. But yes, a very good, if a little basic wrestling match, but it's all it needed to be. Swerve selling previous injuries from the pay-per-view versus the Hangman Adam Page, one of the most violent and brutal matches in the history of pro wrestling. Just a bloody war. If you haven't seen Strickland versus Hangman Page 2, the Texas Death Match, you must check it out. It was a polarizing affair. A lot of people did not like it. It was too much for some people's tastes, but that's totally fine. I do think it's worth watching in the way that a really good horror movie is worth watching. You should be able to appreciate the sacrifices made by these two men, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. If you've already seen it and you didn't like it, there's no point in going back to anything like that. But I do think every wrestling fan at least once should check out that match. Maybe around Halloween, because it was a bloodbath. Yes, that was referring, of course, to the Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland match. This match here, Swerve Strickland versus Jay Lethal, very, very much what you would expect, what you would picture when you see these two guys across each other's name on the blackboard backstage. So the finish to this match comes when Jay Lethal tries the Lethal Injection, which is like a handstand into the ropes into an RKO. As he's doing his handstand in the ropes, Swerve Strickland kicks out his leg, drop kicks his leg in midair, which hurts Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal on the ground, selling that leg. Swerve Strickland hits his house call kick, boot to the back of the head, goes to the top rope, hits the Swerve Stomp, diving foot stomp, and gets the pin on Jay Lethal, your winner and new owner of 3 points in the Continental Classic Gold League. Swerve Strickland, Swerve pins Jay Lethal with the Swerve Stomp, 13 minutes and 51 seconds. And by way of his victory, Swerve Strickland gains 3 points in the AEW Continental Classic. Good match overall. Let's give it 3 gold leagues out of a possible 5 gold leagues. I quite enjoyed it. It was definitely good. Just by nature, both because it's the start of a tournament and because it's Swerve Strickland selling injuries from a previous match, it was a little basic. They took their foot off the gas just a little bit, but these guys are such professionals that it was still a good wrestling match. Worth your time, for sure. And after every episode of the Dynamite 3D show here, the AEW 3D podcast, while the Continental Classic is going on, I will run down the standings at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that back out. Next up, a sight for sore eyes, Maxwell Jacob Friedman and Adam Cole, your Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, in fact, the Bro Chachos. They come to the ring with Adam Cole on crutches from his ankle surgery and MJF with a cane from his apparently dislocated hip. Apparently MJF dislocated his hip in the match versus Jay White at the pay-per-view, where MJF came off the top rope with an elbow to Jay White, who was on a broken table. He didn't even have the table to break his fall. He just elbowed this man, Shane McMahon style, off the top rope to the cold arena floor. Apparently that bump, as they say, that fall, dislocated Maxwell Jacob Friedman's hip, so we hope that he is okay. And AEW has worked that into the storyline here. But yes, MJF, Adam Cole in the ring. MJF says some stuff about wanting to go deep dish with the ladies of Chicago, and his voice is hoarse because he was pounding beers and pounding other things last night. He is not here to talk about pizza. He first mentions Jay White being one of the toughest challengers he's ever faced in his young career. Jay White is the real deal and absolutely worthy of praise, even though he lost to a one-legged man. Adam Cole then gets on the microphone for story time with Adam Cole, baby. Cole says he's not really even close yet to being cleared. He can't even walk. He can't even start rehabbing. So, in storyline, Adam Cole was supposed to be the replacement for MJF had MJF not been able to wrestle Jay White. They did a whole angle. It actually was the reason why a lot of people didn't like that match. This storyline beat makes no sense. And they really hammered home in this promo how little sense it made that Adam Cole would have been allowed to fight Jay White at the pay-per-view. Anyway, let's just leave that in the past because it was just dumb, bad storytelling from AEW. But yes, Adam Cole is apparently still unable to even start training. It's going to be a long time before we see Cole in the ring. Maxwell Jacob Friedman mentions the man who stole his devil mask. And we get a quick cut, a quick inset of the man in the devil mask laughing. I guess kind of insinuating that it's not Adam Cole because he's in the ring. But perhaps it was a pre-tape that Adam Cole got the truck to run, I suppose. At which point Samoa Joe comes to the ring. So on the pay-per-view, Samoa Joe replaced Adam Cole, who was not cleared to wrestle the tag team match, as MJF's champion. In that match, they were against the Gun Club, and that's where the Gun Club attacked MJF, putting him in the hospital before the pay-per-view. And then Adam Cole, who was not cleared to wrestle in the first match, stepped up and said he would wrestle for MJF in the main event, which is completely absurd and dumb. If you're too injured to play in the game and you're on the injured list and you're in the press box, you don't then get to run in the game and play in overtime or the fourth quarter. Do you know what I mean? Like, if he wasn't cleared at the start of the night, he's not cleared. Anyway, bad storytelling from AEW, but it did lead us to this point where Samoa Joe says, "You owe me a favor, Max. I demand that you give me a rematch for your AEW world title." MJF, which is bleeped, says, "Blow me," to Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe starts choking MJF, and Adam Cole stops him. Cole says, "No, Joe, don't kill him. Please, for the love of God, stop choking, my friend. Max, I want to talk to you." That's what the old MJF would say. But the new MJF, he's a man of his word. You promised Samoa Joe that he would get a title shot, and more importantly, you promised the fans that Joe would get a title shot if he teamed with you. And the fans love MJF now because when you say something, it happens. You're a man of your word. So be a man of your word and give Joe a title shot. This motivates MJF. By God, he's got a friend who believes in him, and he gets so blinded with passion that he challenges Samoa Joe right here, right now, in Chicago, for the title. Joe says, "Absolutely not. I don't want to destroy you on this night and then have you go on the internet and whine that you weren't healthy. I'm going to be watching your back until you're 100%. I'm going to make sure you don't break a fingernail." And then when we get to World's End, December 30th, Saturday, the pay-per-view in Long Island, which is in MJF's hometown, Samoa Joe says he will take the title there in front of MJF's friends and family while MJF is healthy. So Max agrees, and we have the match set for the next pay-per-view, which is December 30th, AEW World's End in Long Island. The Long Island boy, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, versus Samoa Joe for the AEW World Championship. This was an alright promo. Again, the storytelling on the pay-per-view with Adam Cole was just absolutely just out there, just completely made no sense. They overthought it. Sometimes you try to do something creative and it gets away from you. It's not the end of the world, but it was a bad idea, and I wish they would have just kind of not brought more attention to the fact that Adam Cole is so very injured. Anyway, we are getting MJF versus Samoa Joe at AEW World's End. Good little promo overall. Nothing wrong with it except for the things they did on the pay-per-view, which they kind of had to address a little bit. Match number two on the evening, a trios match, a six-person tag. Jake Hager and 2.0, Daddy Magic Matt Menard and Cool Hand Angelo Parker, they are against the Motley Crew of Hook, son of Taz, Orange Cassidy, and Katsuyori Shibata, Striker, the wrestler, the Japanese Puro Resu legend. What a trio there. Before the match begins, Orange Cassidy says he has a Thanksgiving surprise, and the screen plays a Danhausen video, and indeed Danhausen, very nice, very evil comedy wrestler, Conan O'Brien's favorite wrestler, Danhausen, by God, makes his entrance. He looked pretty pumped to be there. It was pretty silly that they did this on Thanksgiving and not, you know, Halloween, when it would have made significantly more sense. I wonder why they cut Danhausen from the Halloween show. He hasn't been very pleased about that. He's been a squeaky wheel on social media, but he has gotten the grease. Danhausen is back in AEW. I hope he gets a chance to wrestle. I hope he gets a chance to do something more than just being a glorified mascot, than just being Orange Cassidy's pet in the corner. Yeah, this was pretty much an average tag team match, though. It went through a commercial, almost more commercial than match this was. The highlight of this match, by far, was Jake Hager, the former Jack Swagger, in there with Katsuyori Shibata. That was really cool to see. They were beating the heck out of each other. I quite enjoyed the interplay between those two. The finish comes when Jack Swagger just running roughshod on the baby faces, but Danhausen jumps up on the apron and pulls out of his coat Jake Hager's purple hat. He loves that hat. We haven't seen that hat in months since he quit the Jericho group. But Jake Hager jumped out of the ring. He was so mad that Danhausen had his hat. Danhausen puts the hat on, curses Jack Swagger, Jake Hager, as Orange Cassidy hits a dive onto Jake Hager, wiping him out. At that point, Hook and Shibata put their submission finishers onto 2.0. This was a pretty clever spot. Hook grabs the one guy, Shibata grabs the other. They're choking them out, and they realize that Hook is legal, but he's got the illegal man in his submission. So they trade opponents as their life bars are on, you know, yellow, nearing red, almost dead, near zero health. They trade their groggy opponents, lock the submission on the other one, and everybody taps out. Your official decision here, Hook submits, I believe it was Angelo Parker, one of the 2.0 guys, with the Red Rum Tasmission Kata Hajime, if you will. Not much to this match, but a little bit of fun. Pretty average trios match. Let's call it 2.5 Red Rums out of 5, right on that Mendoza line. You know, a solid bit of fun. And my big takeaway here is give Danhausen something to do. Give him something that he can sink his teeth into, please. Don't just have him walk out for 5 minutes every week and go, eh! You know, like, I actually put him in a feud. Put him in some matches. Let's see what you can do with this guy. Let's see what you've got here. Backstage, Renee Paquette is with Adam Cole. And as they are talking, Roderick Strong rolls up in his wheelchair yelling, Adam! And the crowd loves that. That has really gotten over. It gets a big pop. The crowd yells it too. It's making Roderick Strong quite popular. He asks Adam Cole, Roderick Strong does, if he saw last week when Action Andretti actually dropped him on his head and he has a reason to be selling his neck. And Adam Cole screams at Roderick Strong, shut up, Roddy, that's enough. That's enough. I need you to get it through your head. We aren't best friends anymore. You've abused me in this friendship. You're yelling at me. You're annoying. And I'm done. So we are not best friends anymore. And Adam Cole storms off. Roderick Strong looking heartbroken here. And I felt some sympathy for Roddy. I was like, aw, poor guy, you know, just to get chewed out like that on national television. And the camera slowly zooms in on Roddy as he tells the Kingdom, his boys, Cole didn't mean that. He didn't mean that. And he looks very sure, but decreasingly sure of his friendship with Adam Cole. It was a brief little 30-second promo, but I actually quite like that. I loved Roderick Strong in this promo, which is something I very rarely say. I can't stand the Adam thing. I get that it's supposed to annoy me, but why would I spend my time watching something that's supposed to annoy me? That's fucking stupid. It's like the Have you ever seen the South Park episode? It's like season two or three. The Jagovasaurus, which is based on Jar Jar Binks. Or he came out around the time that The Phantom Menace came out. And it's like the least popular episode of South Park of all time because those things are so annoying. To me, Roderick Strong yelling, "Adam," is the equivalent of the Jackoffosaurus from South Park. It's just too annoying. You're doing your job too well. You've actually annoyed me way too much. But it's still working for the crowd, so hey, what do I know? Then we had the craziest segment of all time this week. Christian's rechristening of his sons, I suppose, in the patriarchy, Nick Wayne and the Luchasaurus. So let's summarize the big beats here, the big storyline, accomplishments, shall we say, the things that they did in this promo. So Christian rechristens the Luchasaurus into Killswitch. He is now known as Killswitch, but Nick Wayne gets to keep his name. He gets a nickname. He is Nick Wayne the Prodigy. Nick Wayne didn't lose at the pay-per-view. Luchasaurus did, so Luchasaurus loses his name. Then out comes Nick Wayne's mom, Shayna Wayne, getting some whistles and catcalls from the thirsty Chicago crowd. She pleads with Christian to stop stealing her son from her. Christian says, "You made $40,000 a year being a waitress, and it's a good thing your husband is dead already." Oof. Because if he weren't, Nick Wayne would have disowned him anyway to join up with Christian. With Christian berating this poor woman in public and on television, the newly christened Killswitch, former Luchasaurus, now he is known as Killswitch, steps up to Christian, stands up to him, steps in front of Shayna Wayne. This angers Christian greatly, and Christian shoves the Luchasaurus into Shayna Wayne, who falls into the ropes, takes a big bump, and is apparently unconscious from hitting the ropes. Fair enough. So Christian then demands that Nick Wayne, 18-year-old kid, get two chairs from under the ring, and Christian is going to decapitate his mother in front of him. Nick Wayne obliges him. Nick Wayne goes and gets these chairs. Christian sets up one chair underneath Shayna Wayne's head, raises the second chair high up in the air, and is going to kill Shayna Wayne when he stops and hands the second chair to Luchasaurus, to the Killswitch instead. And he says, "Killswitch, do what your name says and kill this poor woman here on television." Luchasaurus hesitates, presumably because he is a dinosaur with a heart. He does not kill poor Shayna Wayne here on television. Instead, while he's hesitating, Edge, Adam Copeland, runs out. "Honesty, I see clearly." And, he spears everyone in sight, absolutely wrecks house on these heels. Then Shayna Wayne, recovering, cowering in the corner, must watch as Edge grabs young Nick Wayne and hits him with the chair sandwich. So, with Shayna Wayne cowering in the corner in fear, selling her hurt neck that she just incurred, Edge just brutalizes her poor 18-year-old son in front of her face, doesn't even acknowledge her. He just sandwiches this poor kid's head between two chairs, the old concerto, as we have seen before. So obviously, Shayna Wayne is quite upset, distraught. She goes to the side of her unconscious dead son while Edge makes mean guy face to Christian. So I really do think this appears to be setting up Shayna Wayne joining up with the heels. Shayna Wayne joining the patriarchy. And honestly, with good reason. At this point, I'm cheering for Shayna Wayne. Like, that was a dick move by Edge. And this poor traumatized woman in the last year has lost her husband. And in these last 20 minutes, got hurt, got almost beaten down and decapitated herself. And then was saved only to watch the savior decapitate her son. This girl needs therapy, by God. That was a terrible turn of events for Shayna Wayne. A strange bit of babyface work from Edge here. Weird all around. But I do think ultimately this is going to lead to Shayna joining up with the heels, joining up with Christian and the patriarchy, as he calls his group. And I think that's a pretty good idea. But the way they got there was strange. Kind of made Edge look like a dick. I don't really want to cheer for Edge anymore. Backstage, we see Renee Paquette, Canadian legend, with Anna Jay 2.0 and Jake Hager. Everyone just screaming at each other. Anna Jay cuts them all off, says, "Hey, tonight is about me." I'm just thinking, like, we've seen this promo a dozen times already. This is all Anna Jay says. It's just her group is yelling around her. She's like, "Hey, this is about me. Stop fighting." And then they go out to the ring. They all continue fighting and she loses. That's happened like 7 times on AEW television. So that happens again. Meanwhile, as all this is happening, Angelo Parker gets a phone call and we see a picture of Ruby Soho's face. We see that it's Ruby calling old Angelo Parker on the phone. Angelo does not answer, but he looks pretty happy that Ruby Soho is hitting him up, blowing up that phone. If this were 2015, one might make a joke about Drake's Hotline Bling song. Thank God those days are over. Match number 3, the Continental Classic Gold Group. We get Switchblade Jay White versus Rush. This was interesting. I almost thought this might go to a draw. I kind of had no idea who would win this match because they really don't beat Rush too often. But at the same time, Jay White just lost at the pay-per-view to MJF. You would think that they'd want to keep Jay White somewhat strong because he'd been pushed at the top of the card for the past month. So what we got here was Rush beating the crap out of this man for 95% of the match, and then Switchblade kicking him in the balls and hitting his finisher to win. So the bad guy cheats. Rush, I guess, is officially a baby face, a strong, violent baby face. Boy, they chopped the shit out of each other in this match. If you like chops, if you like two men slapping each other on the chest, well, you won't believe what I have in store for you. It is to your exact specifications. This match is, quote, the great late Mitch Hedberg. After 13 solid minutes of chopping, just a chopping and a slapping, like the slap chop. Indeed, the Switchblade does kick this man in the balls, hit his finishing move, the Blade Runner, which is Bray Wyatt's old, cutter thing, the twisting STO thing. Blade Runner to his opponent, your winner, 13 minutes and 53 seconds, almost the exact same time as Swerve versus Jay Lethal. Jay White defeats Rush. Jay White gains 3 points in the Continental Classic Gold League. Rush gains 0. I don't know, this one was weird. Something about it didn't quite click, and yet I would still call it the best match on the show to this point. For sure. Let's go 3.5 slap chops out of a possible 5 slap chops. A solid B from these two guys. And I think they have a better match in them. If this was the main event of a pay-per-view, I think it would be even better than it was on this occasion. That's probably safe to say, though. Backstage, we get footage of at the pay-per-view after the press conference, after the media scrum, as they say, Ricky Starks and Big Bill attack Chris Jericho. They grab one of those crates on wheels, one of those wheeled boxes that are just backstage at every professional wrestling show ever, and they wheel that crate into Chris Jericho's arm. Big Bill, wearing no shirt and glasses, which is a flex, like that look. Ricky Starks and Big Bill, your tag team champions for now anyway, but I feel like they're losing those belts to Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega. We got a pretty funny thing, but it might be too much comedy for your AEW Women's Champion, perhaps, but it made me laugh at least. The Wrestle Ants, RJ City and Renee Paquette, they're on the stage. They have an envelope in hand, so they present the AEW Women's title. If it were an award, as if it were the Academy Awards or the Golden Globes here. They open up the envelope. RJ says, "Oh, this is exciting. And your new AEW Women's Championship, the title goes to Timeless Toni Storm." Toni Storm is in the crowd and she just absolutely celebrates. She goes nuts. She reacts as though she didn't know this was coming. Gets her. She actually falls, stumbles on her way up the ramp, which may have been, you know, a reference to something that I didn't catch. I think she actually just stumbled, but it works for this crazy, potentially drugged out character. Tony Storm says, oh, she didn't know this was coming. Then pulls out a pre-prepared speech where she thanks Anthony Khan, studio head, as it were. She thanks Warner Brothers Discovery and Jack Warner, the original, I believe, studio head, the original head of Warner Brothers, a Canadian, don't you know, actually born in London, raised in Canada. In 1892, he was born. He died in 1978. I really love this Tony Storm character, part Marilyn Monroe, part Goldust, all crazy. And Tony quickly speed runs through the women in the locker room, Hikaru Shida, the person who trained her, all the Tony Storms who want to be her. This is her spotlight, and they will not take it. And then Tony says, everyone stay in school. And the words, standing ovation, flash on the Titantron, the big screen. They also did a gimmick here where Tony's music played right away, like to play her off, and she stopped the music. It's a little, maybe a little too much comedy, but it actually did make me laugh. I smiled throughout this entire promo. I was entertained, and that's the goal of wrestling, right? Not everything needs to be raw or serious. Although, if you do want to say this was too ridiculous and they made their world champion and the title, the very concept of wrestling, seem way too silly, I really have no argument to that. This was extremely silly. But hey, I enjoyed it. As Tony Storm is gearing up to leave, Sky Blue comes out. Her entrance hits. She is the new mean goth Sky Blue. Sky Black, if you will. They do the whole stare down thing. It appears like Tony Storm's next challenger will be Miss Sky Blue. Setting up our next match, a triple threat attraction. Sky Blue versus Ruby Soho versus Anna Jay. So I did not like this match. I thought this was a bad match. But it was wrapped around the story of Ruby Soho and Angelo Parker kind of flirting a little bit, kind of doing a will they, won't they. At one point, Ruby Soho literally like falls into Angelo Parker's arms. And they like she's like holding onto him. And they're looking longingly into each other's eyes. This causes both persons, both parties' respective flunkies, Matt Menard and Saraya, to yell at each other. And honestly, as much as it's cool that they're trying like a romance storyline, I guess it's whatever. It's a strange choice to put Angelo Parker and Ruby Soho together on this storyline. It just strikes me as an odd pairing. I wonder if they're close friends in real life or are romantically linked in real life. Because it's just such a random thing for these two characters to be doing. But at least it's leading to Matt Menard and Saraya screaming at each other. That's really funny. If ever there were two carnies in professional wrestling, it is Paige and Daddy Magic. And I just want to see them get together. Maybe not even like romantically, but if they're doing this thing where Angelo Parker and Ruby Soho or, you know, dating or whatever. They could be the best friends who hate the relationship and hate each other. And I think that would be much funnier and more entertaining than whatever it is they're planning with Ruby Soho and Angela Parker. So more Daddy Magic and Paige screaming at each other, please. I actually quite like the potential we have there. So as all that kerfuffle, that nonsense is happening in the background, Sky Blue escapes the Queen Slayer sleeper hold of Anna Jay, hits a TKO onto Anna Jay, and gets the victory. Your winner in this triple threat match, Sky Blue, 8 minutes and 52 seconds. This match was pretty bad. It was not a good wrestling match, but they're doing this romance angle between Ruby Soho and Cool Hand Ange, and I am intrigued for that. You've got my attention here, AEW, mostly just because I want it to lead to more Saraya and Daddy Magic interplay. That's the real money couple right there. Sky Blue wins, 8 minutes, 52 seconds. Bad match. Let's call it two goth girls out of a possible five goth girls for young Sky Blue. backstage Canadian legend Renee Paquette approaches Wardlow, who is curling random pieces of equipment like Brock Lesnar used to do, just backstage, just curling shit. Renee goes, "Hey, Wardlow, I've requested this time." Wardlow says, "Wait, not yet. I'm curling this piece of metal." That was pretty fun. Renee asks Wardlow what his business is with MJF and what he's waiting for. Wardlow says the downfall of the devil happens on my time. At which point, of all people on the earth, AR Fox walks up to Wardlow and says, "You know, you're not taking responsibility. I did the same with Darby Allin. Stop putting the blame on everyone else." And Wardlow cuts him off, says he doesn't need advice from anyone, especially you, AR Fox. You're like 0-37. He didn't say that, but it's true. I don't think I've seen AR Fox win a match yet on AEW television. And then Wardlow headbutts this poor man in the mush because he's a bad guy, you see. Wardlow, I've never said this before, but good promo for Wardlow here. I actually quite enjoyed this. Just curling stuff and headbutting clowns. It's a good character. I think they have something with this Wardlow. And that brings us to our main event of the evening, a first-time contest, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Jon Moxley had ever been in the ring with a Briscoe brother. Until tonight, Jon Moxley versus Mark Briscoe, chicken farmer extraordinaire in the Continental Classic Gold League. I could honestly watch half an hour of this. They had really good chemistry. Their styles fit each other quite well. Mark Briscoe's like a little bit of a high flyer, but he's a mean guy. He'll mix it up. He'll strike with you. Jon Moxley is obviously like the believable fighter. He's a striker. He's a wrestler. He's a ground-based Pokemon. And I thought they really worked well together. This was an excellent wrestling match for what it was. Very, very good. And I want to see it again. I want to see this as like a pushed program. They drastically underutilize Mark Briscoe, don't they? I would buy Mark Briscoe as world champion. He's got a 100% approval rating. There are no fans out there who are booing Mark Briscoe. He's such a fun character. He's a great wrestler. They drastically underutilize this guy. So it was really cool to see him in the main event of an AEW show. Hard-hitting, mean guy match this was. And Moxley gave him a lot, as they say. He let, I'm not sure if it was Moxley's decision, but you know, he did, in fact, let Mark Briscoe kick out of everything. He kicked out of the Death Rider, his finishing move, and the crowd went ballistic when Mark Briscoe kicked out of that. I think it was past the 10 o'clock hour when Mark Briscoe kicked out of the double arm DDT. And I think a couple people in the crowd thought, "Oh my God, is Mark going to win this match?" But he did not. Jon Moxley hits a curb stomp and a second Death Rider elevated double arm DDT to get the win here on the best match on AEW Dynamite. 11 minutes and 29 seconds. Your winner, Jon Moxley, who gets 3 points in the Continental Classic Gold League. And then to close the show, Moxley stands up, shakes Mark Briscoe's hand, shows him respect, and leaves the ring. Very good stuff overall. Again, the best match on the show. I would call it, like, let's say a solid B+ wrestling match, and it could have been an A had it gotten more time. So B+, 75% in Canada. We consult the calculator. That's 3.75 out of 5. Sounds like 3.75 stars to me. 3.75 chickens out of a possible 5 chickens on this match to end Dynamite. Good stuff. So let us go to the Continental Classic standings here, and then we'll send you on your merry way. Continental Classic standings through night 1 of competition in the gold group. Jon Moxley 1-0, 3 points. Swerve Strickland 1-0, 3 points. Switchblade Jay White 1-0, 3 points. Mark Briscoe 0-1, 0 points. Jay Lethal 0-1, 0 points. And Roosh 0-1, 0 points. In the blue group, nobody has wrestled yet, but the blue group consists of Andrade El Idolo, Brody King, Brian Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, the Dragon Slayer, Danny Garcia, and Eddie Kingston, my favorite wrestler on the earth. I think, I might be wrong, but I think we're going to get Eddie versus Moxley here. John Moxley is going to win the gold group. Eddie Kingston's going to win the blue group. I believe that's where this is going. It wouldn't surprise me to see Swerve Strickland win this whole thing, hold the triple crown. That could be pretty interesting too. But I think we're going to get Moxley versus Eddie as the final at the pay-per-view. And Eddie is going to win the whole thing. I actually am predicting Eddie Kingston to win the Continental Classic, to hold the triple crown. But that might be clear and obvious bias because Eddie Kingston is my favorite wrestler. That's certainly what my heart is cheering for. My heart may have tricked my brain. My name is Matthew Edrier for Sunday Night's Main Event, and we have lots of good stuff here on the network, including the Draw Straw Raw Review. I don't know. We should maybe change the name on that one because straws are no longer being drawn. It is Randy Chapontier and Eric Blondon reviewing Raw every single week. Love the boys. Good work there. Major League Wrestling Rewind with George McKay and Uncle Bobby B. Steve Swift's numerous podcast on the network. We have his Continental Wrestling Review. He talks about some old wrestling. We also have Steve Swift's Ramblin' NXT Review. By God, Impactful is a podcast on the network about Impact Wrestling with Eric Blondon. We have the Smack Daddies, Greg Feltham and Brad McKinnon, two good old buys from down east, don't you know, reviewing WWE SmackDown. Rampage Ramble with Boris Aguilar and Dax Xavier Josiah. AEW Collision Catch-Up with Aaron Grant and Matthew Grant. Wrestling has more than one royal family. And Live Audio Wrestling is back too. By God. The only place where you can hear interviews of Kazarni and the Blue Meanie. My name is Matthew Edrier. Feel free to reach out to me, social media, Facebook Messenger, what have you. I'm out there. Not a hard man to find. Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you for sticking with us. And to quote the great Brody Lee, yeah, yeah, yeah.